Though you may soar like an eagle, though you may place your nest among the stars, from there I will bring you down, says the oracle of Jehovah. Obadiah, chapter 1, verse 4, the only chapter of Obadiah. Verse 4, the Word Green version of 2003, that's the version of yours truly. Our daily scripture for today, little children, from 2003, the translation of yours truly, that was done at that time. And in the article, The Ark of Urartu, chapter 10, paragraph 8 now, to the right, at the top here, the right-hand side of the page, we have this illustration of the Mayan, the Delanda Mayan pictographic alphabet from the 16th century, a page from the manuscript Relación de las Cosas de Yucatán by Diego de Landa, showing the Mayan hieroglyphs used to represent the sounds of the Spanish alphabet. Isn't that a lovely illustration? Black and white, very simple. Line drawing. And with commentary, it looks like written in Spanish there. In the ancient language of astronomy, now, as we begin to read chapter 10, paragraph 8 of part 2 of the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express, the article, another one by yours truly. In the ancient language of astronomy were the symbols of a zodiac. Now keep in mind, I translated the Bible, I didn't write it. The articles I wrote. As there was reasonably also a certain arithmetic, there were also symbols of a zodiac in the language of ancient astronomy. Mathematics, which is a symbolic language, and the Chinese language, which is symbolic pictures, together with a most ancient Sumerian cuneiform, it is logical to declare, came from the land of Shinar after the flood, in which land did the people worship so greatly the heavens and the heavenly bodies in all their movements that the record of religion and science are together in declaring it to this very day. And the Kainan, who invented Chinese astronomy, invented the Chinese language after that, a symbolic language that came into being very close to the time we ascertained as Babel. Cuneiform and Chinese writing are perhaps related in their origin by being associated with the earliest astronomy and with the mathematics of a religious system which required, as a departure from the sacred tongue, rather than letters for expressing that language, only symbols of a kind which served the purpose of their false worship. The mathematics and symbols of astronomy and what it may have engendered. The Book of Jubilees told of Kainan finding symbols inscribed in the rock from before the flood, which he also wrote down, saying nothing to Noah, because he knew it was not something of which Noah approved. And it says that the writing was that of the watchers, implying that there were those who watched the heavens before the flood and who saw in their activity a different form of expression, one that departed from the true religion expressed mathematically. In allowing that cuneiform, Chinese and mathematics might be related by false religion, we have made no great claim. Egypt also had a pictographic language, hieroglyphics. Mr. Smith quotes Mr. Warburton's Divine Legation thus, quote, "Not only the Chinese of the East, the Mexicans of the West, and the Egyptians of the South, but the Scythians of the North, as well as those intermediate inhabitants of the earth, the Indians, Phoenicians, Ethiopians, Etruscans, etc., all use the same way of writing, by picture and hieroglyphics." That was a quote from Sacred Annals by George Smith, Volume 1, The Patriarchal Age, page 54, from 1847. Sumerian, Chinese, Indian, and others, all those common to picture writing, do not necessarily share a common tongue. While languages related to Hebrew are related by alphabet. And Table 11 shows proposed titles for this article, ones that were proposed between the dates of October 2nd and October 31st of the year 2010 of the Common Era. There are 40 different proposed titles in Table 11. And then there are 41 through 80 between October 31st and November 1st of that same year. The same year, it's a continuation of the same table. And then there are between 81 and 120 from November 1st to November 13th of the same year. And then from November 13th to November 15th, we have numbers 121 to 160. And November 15th to November 23rd, numbers 161 to 172, which were the last group, being less than 40 in the last group. So there were a lot of different proposed titles. In all, 172. Noah was one proposed name for this article. Another proposed title was No Seat Unbooked. Do Not Do According to Their Deeds was another one. No Stone Unturned, Son of Lamech. Nose, N-O-S-E. No History, Toward Noah. No Sweat, Noahan History. Noah, The Me Now Generation. The Race is On. The One True God. Not for sale. Noah to Abraham. No Go, The Race is On. Noah, No Fool, The Ba of Bel. From What I Know, N-O-E. The Tower of Babel. The Darkest Time. Second Try. Nimrod and the Mark of Kanji. The Tower of Nimrod and the Birth of Nations. The Mark of Kanji and the Tower of Nimrod. The Power of God, the Tower of Nimrod and the Heavenly Blessing, Mark of the Dragon, the Tower of Nimrod, the Power of Impossibility, Tower of Babel, Cleft of the Proud, Bereft of Pride, Tower of Nimrod and the Yellow Emperor, the Chinese Brush, in brackets, Line, the Line of a King, the Knot of the Yellow Emperor, For the Love of Nimrod, Anno, full colon, From Noah On, Saved by Faith, Ara the Handsome and Haig the Hero, Descendancy of a King, The Baptism of Faith, Descendancy of a King and the Universal King, Not for Sale, K-N-O-T, Not by a Long Shot, From Noah On to the Very Day the Voyage Goes On, Not by a Long Shot, The Tower of Babel in Ancient Writings, Noah, Nimrod, and Ninus, The Mark of Kangji, Middle-earth, a world of men, the eight immortals, from Noah on, Cainan and the Tower of Babel, shame name, from Noah to Abraham and On. Aftermath of the flood, Noah, Nimrod and the Tower of Babel, the race is on, the race is won, O-N-E. On the mountains of Armenia, or Ararat, or Urartu, on a clear day, the eight immortals of Middle-earth, the eight immortals and the Mark of Nimrod, Nimrod, descent from antiquity, shame name, probably not, K-N-O-T. The heat is on. Noah, Eridu to Earth, Eridu in Babel, Erech in Middle-earth, Hurrian to Heliopolis. The race is on, the dawn of civilization, Noah's Ark. The Bronze Age, Hurrian to Hell. The Ark of Noah to the Temple of Solomon, the Era of Dreamers. No to Solomon, that's N-O-E. The Bronze Age, Era of Dreams, the Era of the Dreamers and the Eight Immortals. Nimrod, Hamson, Phineas Japhethson, and Cainan Shemson. Nimrod, Ham, Phineas, Japheth, and Cainan Shem. The pure language of Nimrod and the ancient writings of Phineas, Pharsa, and Cainan, in brackets China. The story of Noah in the Bronze Age, 3300 to 1200. Notes on the pure language from the Bronze Age. On ancient lines and lineages, Des lignes ou lignées anciennes, by Rolf Ward Green and Anne Ruth Rutledge, the human race. Byzantinian Arkmark, the very kind rainbow. Meanwhile, back at the farm, anchors of hope. The eight immortals, anchors of hope, funny farm, turkey farm. Second try, farm on the mountain, a world that never was. Fire mist, house of heaven, the good ship lollipop. Phony money, spelled P-H-O-E-N-I, over the wall of heaven, possession, Herc, H-U-R-K, hyphen, the Hurrian Ark, introducing Cainan as the phoenix, the Hurrian Ark, Hake and Ara. Hark, hyphen, the Hurrian Ark, Hake and Ara, for the love of Nimrod, mountain of God, a Hurrian Ark, summit Hurrian. Summit in Armenia, Asia by summit, summit in arrears, the summit of Asia, on top of the world, summit second, summit on Asia, summit of nations on the summit, summit of Asia, summit of the mark, survivor summit, summit of heaven, summit of the phoenix, on fire, possession of the phoenix, proved by fire, the one language of peace, possession of the king. Possession of the phoenix, the fire of redemption, a fire of redemption, one word, a fire, the sacred tongue, the polished word, the crested bird, the tongue of the leopard hunter, the birth of the phoenix, for the love of Nimrod, for, F-O-R-E, the love of Nimrod, Narmer of Egypt, in brackets Nimrod, one of many, from the top, the earliest word, by ever after, ever after. The early word, earliest word. By and by, survivor of abuse. On and on. The Orient Pan-Asian Express, or a slow boat to China. The Yellow Emperor, pure heaven on the Oriental Express. Noah is she. Ark of Urartu, and the Orient Express, which is the official title. Pan-Asian Orient Express, Pan-Asiatic holdup on the Orient Express, Noah is she, patriarchal holdup on the Orient Express, Noah is she, patriarchal holdup on the Orient Express, Noah is she, saved through fire. And those were the 172 proposed titles for that article. This article that we're in fact now studying. The official title, having been the one that was the Ark of Urartu, and the Orient Express. And that concludes our day's study of the article, the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express. The Ark of Urartu and the Orient Express, which is the name I chose ultimately for this article. But it's interesting that we have so many different... I came up with a lot of different ideas. They were all just thoughts that came to me about what I might call it, and I wrote them down at different times. So that's what that table 11 is. I hope you enjoyed that. I certainly enjoyed writing them down, and I enjoyed compiling them afterwards. It was rather amusing, I thought, to myself, to consider some of these titles. I found them quite amusing. But I did believe that I'd found the right one with the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express. And it's funny, you don't come up with it as the first thought that you have. I had come up with so many different thoughts there. So that's our day's study, and we have about another 16 and a half minutes, roughly. So, what are we going to talk about for the rest of the time? I didn't expect we'd cover that, but I didn't prepare this study particularly. I just read it today. I didn't really prepare. We could talk about the topics within the paragraph. I mean, but I don't think it's really necessary. The idea was that language originally, or in its most ancient form, was connected to astronomy, is the proposal here. That's the idea. And we've got an example of cuneiform when we saw the declaration made by Cyrus, who was the king who conquered Babylon. He was the king of the Persians initially, and he conquered the Medes. And that became the Medo-Persian Empire under Cyrus. And it was they who conquered Babylon quite some time after Nebuchadnezzar had been king. And we have, well, Nebuchadnezzar ruled about 43 years from 604 BCE to, well, that would be about 561, wouldn't it? Or something like that. And that was around the time when the captive, Jehoiakim, was set free in Babylon by the successor of Nebuchadnezzar. I believe it was the very successor of Nebuchadnezzar who set Jehoiakim free. And he kept on feeding him after that and allowed him to live as a free man in Babylon. That's a story told, I believe that's in the Bible. Let's look that up. It was evil Merodach who set Jehoiakim free. I'm going entirely on my memory. But the Bible gives us a lot of beautiful, beautiful wisdom and beautiful facts, right? Here it is. The 37th year of the exile of Jehoiakim, the king of Judah. He was the son of Jehoiakim. And in the 12th month, on the 27th day of the month, this king of Judah was set free by evil Merodach, the king of Babylon, in the year of his becoming king. The 37th year of the exile of Jehoiakim. When was he taken? Well, that exile occurred just about 3 months after the defeat of his father, who had ruled for 10 years. And his father's name was Jehoiakim, and he had ruled from, in our chronology, 608. 11 years until 597, and it was in the year 597, which is called year 7. It's January of that year, which would be year 7, counting from 604 in the springtime, year 1 of Nebuchadnezzar, to arrive at 597 as year 7 of Nebuchadnezzar, January, was when this defeat of Jehoiakim took place. And at that time, Jehoiakim was enabled to take the throne. But at the return of the year, which would be therefore the spring of 597 BCE, Nebuchadnezzar returned and took this young Jehoiakim, who had ruled for 3 months and some days, perhaps, in Jerusalem. He took him from there to Babylon. So in the 37th year of the exile, which we're going to now calculate, we take 597 minus, or 608 minus 11, minus 37 is 560. So it could be 561, the year before that, the 37th year of the exile. And in that year, when Evil-Merodach became king, right, which we take, let's say 560 plus 1, just because it's the 37th year, so 36 years after, not 37, so we get 561. And adding the 43 years of Nebuchadnezzar, we get 604. So that was right after the death of Nebuchadnezzar, when Evil-Merodach became king, and he freed the king Jehoiakim from, who had come from Judah and had been prisoner at that time. He freed him. And verse 28 of 2 Kings 25 goes on to say, and he began to speak good things with him, and then put his throne higher than the thrones of the kings that were with him in Babylon. In verse 29, and he took off his prison garments, and he ate bread constantly before him all the days of his life. As for his allowance, verse 30, an allowance was constantly given him from the king, daily as due, all the days of his life. That's the last verse of 2 Kings chapter 25. 2 Kings chapter 25. And then that's the end of the book of 2 Kings, which then continues with 1 Chronicles in the Protestant Bible. So that was rather instructive as far as understanding what happened. Somewhat previously to Cyrus, but Cyrus came then, at a later time, when there was another king ruling Babylon. Cyrus came in 539 BCE. And this cuneiform text was very much similar to the Sumerian way of writing, whereas this was different in being syllabic rather than symbolic. So this wrote syllables. This language expressed symbols of syllables, not symbols of ideas, but these letters represented, or these marks represented syllables, but it looked almost identical to the Sumerian, how it looked. It looks a lot like chicken feet or something like that. It was made by impressions. It was done by making impressions on clay, and then by baking the clay to make it permanent. That's how they made their writings in those days, in this case in the Medo-Persian Empire, and also previously in the Sumerian Empire, which was long before, when they made these types of documents in clay. So it's not that they didn't have paper necessarily, it was that paper didn't last long, and so they wanted to make clay inscriptions that would last a very long time. So that's showing the kind of writing that was very similar to the Sumerian. And so if we are trying to discuss now the Sumerian language, which was written to describe astronomy, well, that's what it looked like. It looks like what we would call lines and arrows, or lines and wedges. They look very much like arrows, where the arrows are at the... It's like an arrow with the arrowhead backwards, attached at the end of the line, but turned backwards, so the flat end of the arrow, or the V-shaped end of the arrow, is pointing outwards, away from the line itself. And there are vertical such lines with wedges on the end, and there are horizontal lines also with the same wedges on the end. And then there are wedges by themselves as well. Horizontal, vertical, and there's even a diagonal line with a wedge also pointing in that same opposite direction from what it would look like if it were just an arrow. The wedge is inverted or flipped to point the other way, and then there are diagonal wedges in some cases by themselves with no lines that point diagonally, in this case down, three wedges together. That's one evidently a syllable, right? It was a syllabic language. It's like a code if we're trying to understand it today. To try and break it, we would have to know something about cryptography or something. It's getting a little too warm in here. I don't know how I should cool off. It's always better to keep the neck warm. I wanted to mention that. It's very important to keep the neck warm. You know, because any cold air on your neck when you're living in a cold environment where your house is not really high temperature or, you know, room temperature. If it's lower than room temperature, you need to keep your neck warm, because you will otherwise possibly develop all kinds of problems with your neck. And it's partly because of blood flow in the neck. You know, if you don't have enough blood flow to your neck, all kinds of problems occur. And when you keep it warm, there's no problem at all. It's just very important to know about that. So I'm always wearing something on my neck. You know, whether it's, in this case, I've too many things on the neck, but I've still got the one major thing on my neck, which is keeping my neck warm. It's three layers of hats, which are very, very lightweight polyester silk hats. They're actually tube scarves, which you can wear as a hat, or you can wear them as a scarf if you want to put the whole thing down on your neck. But I've got three of them on top of each other because I need some layers to keep me warmer. And I could layer them any way I want. I think I've got 9 different tube scarves of different colors for like $20 or something, ridiculously low price that you can get sometimes. Well, the cheese that I bought, yeah, I wanted to talk about that. I think maybe I can order the cheese from Toronto or Montreal. I think I can, and save a lot of money that way. It's just that Amazon, you know, is so much easier to order from Amazon. It's so much easier because generally we are used to Amazon. We know we can rely on Amazon to deliver in a certain orderly fashion, and you know, we just are willing to pay more for that, but I don't think I'm willing to pay triple or quadruple for that. So I think I'll probably be able to order these imported cheeses from somewhere else. But I've been, for the one I'm ordering, the one I got that I'm eating now is called, I'm trying to think now, Pecorino. Yeah, Pecorino Calabrese is what it is. It's imported from Italy. It's a sheep's milk, because Pecorino means to do with sheep, I believe. All the Pecorinos are to do with sheep's milk. It's Pecorino Romano is an example. And goat's milk and sheep's milk are better for the human health than cow's milk is. although some cows are better because they have, I'm trying to think what the name of that substance is, the proteins. There are certain proteins in milk, and there are specific names for the proteins. I don't think we want to go there necessarily. It just seems like it's overly complicated to get into that, but there's a type A and a type B of the milk protein that I'm talking about. And the type A and B differ between Europe and North America, with North America being predominantly the one type, which is it causes some problems in quite a few people who have rheumatoid arthritis. By the way, my right hand got better. The arthritis in my right hand got better overnight. I don't know what's going on, but my thumb has still got the swelling here. See if I can show you. There's this bump on my left thumb still. I think the pain is quite a lot less than it was. It is a lot less than it was at its worst, but I'm not sure if it's getting better every day or not, but the bump is still there, so I'm trying to find the right formula for getting rid of it, for, you know, reversing the osteoarthritis. It's not osteo, sorry. Excuse me, osteo. Let's just talk about arthritis a little bit. There's osteoarthritis, which means your bones are losing calcium. That's basically what that is caused by. And I'm doing a lot to make sure my calcium is high enough. I'm taking enough vitamin D and trying to get extra vitamin of other kinds of vitamins like vitamin K2, which is vital to the proper implementation of calcium. And so I'm getting different types of vitamin K2, and cheese will have a lot of different types of vitamin K2 in it, especially, grass-fed animals, the milk from those animals. But the vitamin K2, like MK4 and MK7, I'm taking as supplements, but there's also MK9, MK11, all the different lengths of molecule. I'm not sure if there's all different. MK5, I think. I'm not sure if there's MK6, 7, 8. I think there are. Well, I know there's MK7, but MK8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13, I think all exist in the vitamin K2 family, and they're all beneficial. So that's it for today. It's December 26th, the date, and the year is 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 18:18 hours Canadian Eastern Time. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. Once again, thank you so much for listening and watching. And in my behalf, this is Sissy, and this is Star, saying bye for now. That was Chapter 10, Paragraph 8 today, talking about the ancient language of astronomy and its connection to the languages of the Chinese and other Sumerian and so on, other languages. That's it.